me. You're the appellant's counsel. Would you care to reserve any of your time for rebuttal?
2 minutes.
All right, then we'll be glad to hear you when you're ready.
All right. May it please the court, I represent Mr. Harris on his appeal, and basically he was convicted in the circuit court of the city of Richmond of possession of a firearm while in possession of heroin with the intent to distribute a concealed weapon, subsequent offense, and possession of heroin with the intent to distribute. The police had set up a sting operation near a shopping mall here in Southside, Virginia, over in South Richmond, and they had arrested an informant earlier and had a buy of 1 ounce of heroin arranged. They had a target of an individual who went by the nickname of Oz, who was described.
Mr. Cosby, this is Judge Humphreys. We're familiar with the facts. Let me just see if we can kind of cut to the chase on the issues here.
All right, sure.
I want you to waste a lot of time telling us things we already know. On the Miranda issue, which I guess is issue, I think it's assignment of error number one, the trial court found as a fact that the failure on the part of the police officer, at least the one police officer, to advise your client of his Miranda rights was not deliberate, was not, basically, I think, I forget the exact words the trial court used, but it was along the lines of you haven't persuaded me that this was a deliberate act. Given the holding in Siebert, where does that leave us? Because in Siebert, what was condemned there was the practice, a policy, if you will, of police departments that would deliberately elicit incriminating information prior to giving Miranda and then Mirandize them and get the same information.
Well, I think Your Honor, I think the thing that's troubling for the appellant is the fact that the police officer falsely told the defendant that he was in investigative detention when he was, in fact, under arrest. So there was some misleading by the police, and I know the court is saying that's not in bad faith. The trial court and the officer tried to justify it by saying that he was trying to keep a defendant from being combative, yet it still is going hand in glove with what happened here with the defendant being told one thing and being misled, and then they have a seamless transition from not being warned, being misled by the police, then being warned while everything is part and parcel going along at the same time, which I think the overarching concept here is the misleading part of the police.
But if we were to assume that was improper for some reason, in other words, that the police had in fact deliberately misled your client, how is that part of a Siebert analysis? I mean, Siebert seems to be, which of course Siebert's a plurality opinion, so it's very narrow holding. But Siebert, it seems to me, condemns only a deliberate policy on the part of police to basically arrest and then deliberately not Mirandize the suspect, elicit incriminating information, then Mirandize him, and then try to elicit the same incriminating information. And that isn't precisely what we have here, is it?
Well, not precisely. I think the appellate may well be bound by the trial court's finding, though. The view of the appellate is that the sole reason that the officer had just is to keep the defendant from being combative, or did he use that also as a means to avoid explaining to him his rights and to mislead him overall? So that would be the concern that the appellant has.
Okay, thank you. That answers my question. You want to deal with the sufficiency arguments, then?
I will stand on my, with the court's permission, stand on the brief's argument.
Okay, I didn't mean to cut off the other judges, so I don't know if Judge Chafin or Judge Clements have any questions.
No, I do not.
I do not, thank you.
All right, then,
rest,
Cosby,
Your Honor.
You want to reserve the balance of your time, then?
Yes, sir, Your Honor.
Okay, then Mr. Katz, we'll be glad to hear from you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would just begin by noting that there is a finding by the trial court at page 112 of the joint appendix that the information provided by the confidential informant was reliable, and there's argument from the prosecution at the supplemental argument in suppression, the April 9th date, in support of the notion that if you credit this confidential informant, then certainly probable cause exists to search the scooter. And that has not been assigned as a basis for error in this case. So I would submit that that exists as an independent and unchallenged basis for affirmance. And as such, that resolves the issue of whether this evidence properly came in. Now, to the extent it may be argued, we don't really know what the trial court made of that argument. It's not explicit in the April 9th proceeding. That's the problem of the missing transcript from September 8th, 2004, where clearly this argument was raised and the motion to suppress was denied in any event. So as a threshold matter, I would say that's an unchallenged basis. It's an independent grounds for affirmance. And if for some reason the record is not sufficient to support that notion, then that's a problem with the record. So if we accept the notion that the April 9th proceeding is sufficient to get all these issues out, then I would say it is. And if it's decided that it's not, then that's a problem with perfecting this record for appeal. But independent of
that... How does that affect the Siebert analysis?
Well, I would argue that the Siebert analysis is unnecessary in this case in light of this court's opinion in Kuhn. It's simply immaterial. And the reliance on Justice Souter's plurality opinion in Siebert is misplaced. Given this court's finding in Kuhn that we look to the narrower concurrence, and the issue for that analysis is whether there was a deliberate effort to circumvent Miranda and its prophylactic effect. And we have a valid factual finding by the trial court here at 198 and 199 of the Joint Appendix that there was no deliberate effort. And certainly there's been no argument on appeal that would suggest that that factual finding was wrong or without evidence to support it. So I would submit the issue comes before this court to the extent we get into Miranda. The issue comes before this court in accordance with the Kuhn jurisprudence is saying, well, Siebert doesn't even apply. Elstad is the appropriate governing standard. And as was noted in the concurring opinion in Siebert, an officer may not realize that a suspect is in custody and warnings are required. And I would submit that that's what happened here. You have an officer who states, well, you're in investigative detention. He was not conceiving of the fact that Miranda was necessary. And in light of all the facts that the trial court found, it agreed. And it said, well, you messed up, but that's not a basis for suppression of the later statements, certainly a basis for suppression of the first unmirandized statements. So I would submit to the extent this court feels the need to address the Siebert issue, Kuhn controls the absence of any deliberate conduct or deliberate misconduct to avoid Miranda answers that analysis. And clearly there was not here, as the trial court found, and it properly did not suppress the subsequent statements made after Miranda. To the extent the panel may have questions on the sufficiency issue, I'm happy to address those, but in the absence of any questions, I would rely on brief.
Are there any questions?
No questions.
No. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Katz. Mr. Cosby, anything else you want to say?
No, Your Honor. I appreciate you hearing me.
Okay. Then in that case, the court will adjourn to conference, and we'll have a decision for you shortly.
Thank you, Judge.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.